Today's topic is tests, assessment, and learning, equitable alternatives in pandemic times. Our presenters are Dr. Vance Nguyen and Dr. Amanda Ruiz.
This is more about an inquiry and an investigation into things like tests and equitable alternatives. And it's not that we have the right answer. It's more that we want to stir up some thoughts and begin an inquiry process, if it's not already started. So we want just to get your minds going, and I think that's it. Should we jump in, Dr. Ruiz?
Gosh, why do we assess anyway? Like, what's the purpose? And if I'm going to do it, then what would make it meaningful for me? And what would make it meaningful for my students? And a lot of the times, what I realize makes it meaningful and worthwhile is if they're learning from it.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Todos Mathematics for All podcast. The mission at Todos is to advocate for equity and high quality mathematics education for all students, in particular, Latino and Latino students. Recently, we've had a few webinars that we've hosted as part of Todos Live, and I encourage you to check out those links at our Todos Math for All website. In particular, this episode is devoted to digging a little bit into the concept of assessment, in particular, assessment in the time of our ongoing COVID pandemic. Our guests for the Todos Live session were Dr. Vance Nguyen and Dr. Amanda Ruiz. Vance Nguyen is a mathematics professor at College of Alameda, and Amanda Ruiz is an assistant professor of mathematics in the Department of Mathematics and Computer Science at the University of San Diego. The Todos Live webinar that they delivered was focused on alternative assessments in mathematics classrooms during this time of transitioning to online teaching. Following on their webinar, I asked Vance and Amanda to have a conversation, reflecting a little bit on ideas and issues that were brought up during the session and anything that they felt like they didn't get to address. So the episode that you're going to listen to today is a combination of audio that was recorded as part of their webinar, as well as audio from the conversation that they had following their webinar. First, we're going to hear a few minutes of highlights from their webinar, and then we're going to hear a little bit of their reflecting process. We'll get started with introductions from Amanda and Manson and highlights from their webinar.
So I'll go ahead and introduce myself. I'm Dr. Amanda Ruiz. I am an assistant professor at the University of San Diego in the math department. I'm also a homeschool coordinator for a resistant nine-year-old third grader. And I'm a human play gym for a 13-month-old. And in terms of my job that I'm getting paid to do right now, I'm teaching calculus and math modeling and ecology this semester. And I've really been thinking about alternative assessments mostly in the context of my calculus class. Before COVID kind of threw everything upside down, I was thinking a lot about creativity and calculus under the guidance of the creativity research group. And so that lends itself pretty well to some alternative assessments. So I'm in here just to sort of try to help facilitate thinking about this kind of stuff, as I certainly don't have all the answers. I've just tried probably more things than I have time for.
Okay, so I'm Dr. Vance Nguyen. I teach math at the College of Alameda. That's a small community college that's right outside of San Francisco, but we're in the same community college district as other colleges in Oakland, California. I go by he, him, and I'm based out of San Francisco, born and raised in San Francisco, now living in what's known as the East Bay.
This first highlight is about tests.
And one thing about testing is that the teacher or the faculty member who has all the power in the class, they are subjecting the students to a gaze, and it's a look over everybody. So if I'm gonna hold a test online, I need to look at everyone's screen and look at everyone to make sure that they're in compliance. So that was another thing about testing, and that was related to some people talking about maintaining traditional or status quo power dynamics in society. So that was one piece. In regards to the last bullet point here about group assignments, I mean, a group exam, I mean, how crazy is that? Because to me, learning math is best done collaboratively. I can think of, pretty much every time I did math, I learned it with someone, which, you know, might be too crazy of an idea for people, but that's just kind of where I'm going to start pushing people's thoughts. Okay. Is this one also me?
Yes.
Okay, great. So now here's some less familiar ones that you might, some of you might have already thought of, some of you might have already been implementing, or it might be brand new, but that's okay too. And that's why we're here. So one of the, these are all kind of related, and we'll just go through them one at a time. So the first one that I'm talking about is documenting progress and process. I think if we're in a face-to-face class, we're working on some math problems and students are, oh, okay, well, I did this and I did this. And they might say, I did it. I don't quite know how to explain it. The reality is they do know how to explain it. They're just not used to explaining it. And it's just about the right answer. One thing I'm telling my classes is it's not about the right step. It's about the right, or it's not about what's the next step. It's about what's the next question. And that's kind of what I'm trying to get at when students are documenting their progress and process. To me, assigning points to this and points enough that it's heavily weighted and it's worth it for students is an important thing. And that's something I'm going to advocate for. Dr. Ruiz, I think you have an example on this, don't you?
I do. In the next slide, I mentioned that the derivative calculator online, when I started teaching the derivative rules, I did what I think my students would do, and I went and found a derivative calculator online. And the one I found is actually really great, and it shows all the steps that would need to be taken in order to take the derivative of any function, and it shows a graph and its derivative, and it's a really neat tool. This is a screenshot of it, and what I've started doing is I've asked my students to go ahead and plug the function into the derivative calculator and then annotate it. And they're annotating it with talking about what steps are being taken in that the calculator is showing. So they go into their breakout rooms and they can annotate on Zoom. These are all Zoom screen share annotations that you see here. And you know, they're just looking at what is going on in each step. First we pull out the constant 1/2, and then we're applying the product rule. And then there's points where we take derivatives, and I'm asking them to sort of pay attention to and understand all the algebra and calculus derivative steps that are happening at each point. And then they go ahead and post their group's annotations on the discussion board so that the other students can see what they're doing as well. And that's just the way that I sort of have them hand it in and get credit for their time and their effort. And of course, this is something that works really well in a synchronous class, but also students that are watching the video later can still participate and can still post their annotations on the discussion board. So this is one way that I've been, I've changed the way that I'm asking them to do practice of derivatives with the assumption that they have all of the internet sort of as a tool.
Will you remind us this website again? I'm going to put it in the chat.
This is derivative-calculator.net, I believe.
Any new thing? Actually, just kind of anything in general, the learning really happens in the submission. It doesn't happen in the submission, it happens in the revision. So what's important as students learn to do this type of, learn to engage in math, with math in this manner, that, you know, give them opportunity to revise. So my first exam, we revise it a few times before we get to the next exam. Oh, sorry, we revise our reflection a few times, because the student will just do, will correct their answer and then turn it in. And then I'll give it back to them and say, hey, you know, what are the concepts, what you learned? Oh, I didn't know, I didn't think to do that. And that's okay, so let's revise. And I hand it back and they'll give it back to me. So after the first revision, I would say most students catch on really quick. And a few students, we just do a few more revisions. And this, to me, this process not only helps students, I guess, explain better, but it's really engaging with math in a different manner. And I mean, if you see math not as something to complete, but something to come back to and ask a question about, that to me is a very healthy place to be when it comes to learning math. And I guess the last thing I'll say about this piece is, let me give you an example, a point example of how I might distribute this. So if the regular problem itself in a traditional setting, I would assign it 5 points, for example. So they're graded out of 5 points on correctness. Then they would get back the reflection with the prompt, and it would be an additional 3 points. So 5 for the traditional testing and 3 points for the revision and the reflection. So that now the problem, instead of it being out of 5 points, is out of 8 points. Dr. Rees, was there anything that
I just want to throw in that, like, I've been working revisions into my classes for a while now, and I'm definitely learning something here from Vanson with how I can make those revisions more meaningful, I think, for my students, instead of just redoing the problems that they didn't get correct, actually having them reflect a little bit deeper on them. And something else that I stole from someone on Twitter, and I wish I had the source for this, but this year I stopped giving points in their first submission of the exam. Instead, I just wrote either C, PC, or NY. For C for correct, PC for partially correct, if they mostly had it, but they maybe made a minor error or so, and not yet if it doesn't quite seem like they're getting the concept. And so my students tend to be really point focused. And if those points are there, then they're going to focus on the points and not on the mathematics. So leaving the points off of it, I think, has really helped them.
Question about how this is working online. And I haven't done it yet. I haven't given my first exam online yet. Dr. Ruiz, have you been able to do that?
Well, I haven't given a traditional exam online, but I've done a couple of these discussion board quizzes where, you know, in the example that I showed, that came from my online class. And I think that it's working better online than other methods that I could imagine doing. I'd much rather do this than design a quiz or an exam in Blackboard and have their browser locked down so that they can't use anything. So in that sense, I think it's going pretty well enough that I think I'll keep it after we leave this remote learning environment and go back into the classroom. I think I'm going to keep a lot of these methods and utilize the technology a little bit better, which is something that I had been thinking about doing in my calculus classes anyway.
So one of the things that really prompted this whole discussion is about locking down browsers and looking at everyone's screen to make sure that they're not cheating, you know, put cheating in quotes, and how the environment and culture of testing really promotes that. I'm not going to be the police. To me, that's a waste of my energy. If I have an exam for 3 hours, I don't want to be a police person for 3 hours. I'm not going to be a warden for three. You know, I'm not going to like spend this time trying to look at everyone. No, to me, that's unproductive. Secondly, if I am doing that, these are just my thoughts, I feel like I'm implanting into my students' heads that this is what math is. Someone going to watch over me all the time to make sure I'm in compliance. I'm in line with the rules. So what I plan on doing is I'm going to pretty much be given a take-home exam. And my take-home exam is going to have those questions that are much more open-ended. And there's going to be generate a problem that blank, or connect concepts together. I haven't decided on how I'm going to like ask students to do a concept map yet, but it'll be there. And then following that, there's going to be a reflection. Like, what are the concepts here? Major and minor, what did you learn? What questions do you still have? Like, to me, that is really a very important thing.
So those were some highlights from the webinar, which is recorded and posted on our TOTOS website. Now let's hear some reflections.
You know, I've been thinking about this stuff in general for a long time. This semester, I was involved with the Creativity Research Group's grant. They were looking for calc teachers to do some work for them and try to introduce creativity in the classroom. And we had professional development every week. And so I've been thinking a lot about it, about being creative and trying to have open-ended questions, and that coming together with this alternative assessment just like really sort of helped me set a tone for this remote teaching, to where I just was, it was this like, it was like the, in a weird way, teaching remotely allowed me to take risks that I wouldn't have taken in the classroom. And it forced me to as well, because I couldn't just like fall back on what I usually do. So it was the combination of those things like really affected the way that I taught this semester. For better or worse, I think it was better. I think it's better for my students. I didn't feel very organized, but I'm not a very organized person. I'm not a very decisive person. So I have, when I have a whole bunch of ideas, it can feel really overwhelming because I want to do everything. And then I don't have time to follow through with it. So I think it was really interesting because it got me thinking a lot about, gosh, why do we assess anyway? Like, what's the purpose? And if I'm going to do it, then what would make it meaningful for me? And what would make it meaningful for my students? And a lot of the times, what I realize makes it meaningful and worthwhile is if they're learning from it.
Even non-content? If they're learning non-content lessons like, oh, I should not party the weekend before midterm, like a learning like that?
Well, yeah. I think I focus more on the learning from their mistakes, like content-wise, or organizational-wise, or, oh, I should have watched the video before I came into this class-wise, right? Like, whether they're study skills that they're learning or content that they're learning. So I think it was interesting. I did a lot of discussion board quizzes this semester where it's all, I just like so many people, I'm on Facebook a lot and a lot of like groups that are talking about this kind of stuff. And so many people are concerned about students cheating. And I feel like, well, I did all my quizzes where they're expected to look at each other's work. So the cheating that they can do is pretty minimal, you know? I'm not going to find the quiz question on Chegg. It worked for me.
Can we just digress into that real quick?
Uh-huh.
What do you mean a discussion board quiz?
So they were almost all formatted in some iteration of, write a function that uses the chain. One of them was like, even as general as it goes, write a function that uses at least two of the chain rule, quotient rule, and product rule. And then they worked it out and sent me their work in, not on the discussion board, but they wrote their function on the discussion board.
Oh, okay. And then students weren't, so you couldn't have the same function as someone else, or
have the same function as someone else. And then a follow-up to that is a different week. I had them go on that discussion board quiz, find somebody else's function, and tell me what rules it uses, or rewrite it so that it would use different rules.
Lit.
Or work out and solve for, like, compute the derivative.
I love it.
That has been a pain to grade, mostly because my students haven't really mastered how to, like, take a screenshot and submit things so that it, like, it's easy to grade. So mm-hmm. I could use more instruction in that sense of, like, telling them what I want so that is easier for me. But
that's okay. You know, it's your first iteration. But I also think with 30 students, that's 30 unique functions. And yeah, so that eats up.
I can always throw it into a derivative calculator, because it's funny because they don't pick simple functions. They mm-hmm. end up doing things that, like, requires multiple steps when they're left to their own creativity to come up with things, even if they have to compute the derivative. So I think that's really interesting when they write their own questions, that they can write some really hard ones.
And were these, I guess, these two prompts, did you come up with these before or after the webinar, or?
These two were after.
All right.
Yeah, these two were after. The one I did one before, that was, I asked them to write something on the discussion board, the very first discussion board quiz I did. I asked them to write something that they know isn't true. And the point was, I wanted them to, like, out loud, which is, like, since we're not in class, say something, like, be comfortable saying something that's not true. Like, be comfortable saying something that's wrong. So that, you know, like, that was sitting there for a while, and I definitely intended to follow up on it. And I think for the final, I'm going to ask them to go there and respond to somebody else's statement and
say, lit.
This is, like, make it true, or say something about why it's not true. So hopefully that part of the final will not be as terrible to grade as this last attempt at responding. Blackboard is just not really set up to, like, grade responses to, like, it'll grade the initial post but not the responses, as far as I know. So
I'm thinking this first iteration is always the messiest, right? And I'm really curious to see how this unfolds in the next few iterations.
Yeah, so this I'm the very kind of excited. That you can't predict what is not going to work. You just have to try it and see what's not going to work, which is, I think, the magic element to this, to all of this, right? Because I think any other time I might have been a little bit more resistant to launching something that I didn't know how it was going to work.
Mm.
And I feel more confident about it going into the future now. I think I'll use this stuff a lot more often. So I think the webinar definitely helped me, like, take that to another level.
Not be whoop, whoop. Yeah. Raise the roof, raise the roof.
Success. If me presenting this webinar was me, really me just learning stuff. What was the one thing that you missed that you wanted to say?
So there's people who are interested, like, or they're like kind of interested in whether it's a new thing or something equity related or just somewhere around this. If they're interested, we need to get them to try.
Okay? Yeah.
And if there's someone who's a skeptic, we need to get them to be interested. So there's that like bell curve, like, you know, the at the very left of the bell curve is like the innovators, and then that's like 1% or something, and then there's 5% early adopters, and then there's like the middle, you know, everyone else, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So kind of moving people along that spectrum from skeptic to interest, and then from interested to trying. That's the only thing I would have and I was kind of sad.
Yeah. I was like maybe like nervous, but also was like, oh, Vanson's got this. He's gonna take care of it. So
thank you to Vanson and Amanda for the food for thought. This podcast also featured the voice of Gloria Brown Brooks, our host for the Totus Live online webinars. It featured music, as always, by Vector Hold. Vector Hold, music you can dance to. Well, I hope everybody is doing the best they can with our continuing ongoing global pandemic, staying healthy, staying safe, and letting the Totus podcast keep you company. Be sure to check out our website, totus-math.org. We will be hosting a special series in conjunction with the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics as part of their 100 Days of Professional Development. Look for details of that. That'll be the first full week of July, July 6th through 10th. We'll have a daily webinar that we will host on behalf and in conjunction with the NCTM 100 Days of Professional Learning. Until I see you next time, seguimos luchando. Adios.
It sounds you're dead because the lights were not on.
You thought I was dead?
Yeah.
Say, adios.
Adios.
Ciao, ciao.
Ciao.
Hasta luego.